Diversity really is the religion of the university.
Diversity!
I hope that we can start asking them to better preach what they practice.
Mama, can't you see?
We've all seen the trend on college campuses with students demanding safe spaces to protect themselves from opinions they don't like. But how much of that PC hysteria is being driven from within the ivory tower where progressives rule the school?
You need to get out!
To find out, we talked to John Shields, professor at Claremont McKenna College and co-author of Passing on the Right, Conservative Professors in the Progressive University. It's the first book-length study on conservatives in academia.
Why do this, and how did you sniff out these mythical creatures?
Partly I was interested because I'm a conservative professor, so it was a topic that I was interested in. Also, I think conservative professors provide an interesting window into the university, but also an interesting window into conservatism itself. And they were hard to find in some ways, you know? I mean, they're rare, right? So in the social sciences where I work, they're so rare that they're outnumbered by Marxists.
It's like a 5-to-1 ratio or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Right, that's right. So about 5% of social scientists self-identify as Republicans. And we knew that some of them would be closeted, so that presented other challenges.
Shields uncovered these closeted conservatives by first approaching professors proudly out of the closet and writing for conservative publications. He then got them to name names until he had a healthy sample size.
When you say conservatives, libertarians right. are included in this mix as well, right?
That's right. We think of conservatism or the American right as a coalition against liberalism. My colleague, James Caesar, put it really well. He said, you know, American conservatives, they're united by two self-evident truths. Barbara Boxer and Nancy Pelosi. That is to say, they share a common enemy, but not necessarily common philosophical views or a common policy agenda always. And it's a coalition that's included libertarians, even though they're sometimes a disgruntled sort of faction of the Republican Party and the American right.
Yeah, and what I found interesting is that libertarians actually feel a lot more comfortable, I guess. They don't feel the need to really closet themselves.
They do. You know, it's much better to be pro-market than, you know, pro-family or to be a social conservative. And it's also the case that libertarians tend to gravitate toward economics. And economics is just kind of weird. You know, it's a much more tolerant place than the rest of the social sciences. I mean, you know, when we talk to economists, they said, you know, if you were a free market type in the post-war era, that was a very difficult place to be, right? If you weren't a Keynesian, you were sort of out of the club. But the Chicago School really changed that a lot, right? You had a lot of Nobel Prize winners in economics in the 1950s, people like Milton Friedman and Hayek. So even as the university has really drifted leftward, it's a place that's become somewhat more friendly to people with market-friendly views.
But we see a lot in the news, you know, a lot of Republican presidential candidates have kind of decried the state of the university and
right.
have branded it as a liberal indoctrination
chamber.
Yeah. You know, a bunch of bleeding heart right. liberals. Is that a legitimate criticism? And what did the professors say that you talked to? I mean, do they think that they're being treated fairly?
It's just grossly overstated, you know? And I get why conservatives outside the institution distrust it, right? And why they react in the way that they do sometimes. But no, I think the university is a much more tolerant place than movement conservatives, and certainly Republican candidates often think that it is. And certainly, you know, conservatives inside the university often told us, they said, you know, it's not that bad, right? It's not nearly as bad as David Horowitz says it is, or Marco Rubio recently on the campaign trail. I think, he did call it an indoctrination camp. Yeah, it's a much more tolerant place. And I think that's partly because there's tenure, right? I mean, tenure's a very important institution. Even though some conservatives tend to closet themselves as junior professors, they almost always come out of the closet after tenure, and then they get to do what they want to do, right? So the tolerance of the academy doesn't rest entirely on the social psychology of liberal professors, right? It's really protected by this powerful institution.
Maybe a lot of people on the right sometimes view tenure a little bit suspiciously, but that could be a good benefit of Teddy.
Absolutely. I mean, writing this book and doing the research for it made us much more sympathetic to tenure, right? Because we saw what a difference it made in the lives of these conservatives. So I think conservatives should be out in front defending tenure, actually. Of course it has problems, right? That's absolutely true. Given the fact that, you know, it does protect political minorities and allows them to express their views freely, that's important. And it's something we should defend as conservatives and libertarians.
There's this prevailing idea that I guess stems from a study done way back when that conservatives and libertarians, they're not in the university because they just don't have the mind to be academics, which just seems like such an outdated idea. Right. Why do you think this still persists?
I think it partly persists because there are so few conservatives about in academia. So when my liberal colleagues, or when many of them think about conservatives, they think about its most populist expressions, right? They think about Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, Michelle Bachmann, and that's because they don't really encounter many right-wing intellectuals. The liberal, or once liberal, social psychologist Jonathan Haidt wrote a book called The Righteous Mind, and he's got this wonderful description of browsing in a used bookstore. He picked up a volume on conservative thought that was written by Jerry Mueller, and he said he had to sit down a few pages into it, right? He was quite literally floored because he had never encountered anything like this before. Haidt's a bright guy, he's well-read, but yet he had never encountered conservative ideas at that level before, right? And it's hard to imagine a conservative professor having a similar experience, right? Picking up a book on Marxism and being floored, right? Picking up a book on postmodernism and having their hair blown back, right? That doesn't happen because they're swimming in those kinds of intellectual currents. It's all around them. But even if you're somebody like Jonathan Haidt, even if you're someone that well-read and broad-minded, you can miss, right, conservative ideas.
There's got to be some real-world consequences to not having a diversity of opinion on a faculty staff.
You know, when disciplines become so homogenous, such that there's no center-right people about, or hardly any, it's really hard for those disciplines to converge on the best approximation of the truth, right? They might produce good work, but they struggle to seek truth, and that's partly because of the enduring influence of confirmation bias, right? That is, we all have a tendency to accept findings and theories that fit our pre-existing points of view. And so to really be challenged, to really have to confront our position in a serious way, we need to encounter people who disagree with us. And then I think it's also the case that a lot of students don't really get exposed to center-right ideas, right? And even if you were a liberal professor who really wanted to expose your students to a broad range of views, right, whole bodies of knowledge are so distorted, it seems to me, by leftist paradigms and assumptions that you'd really have to look long and hard for some more dissonant center-right voices.
Even if the teachers or the professors want to include more, it seems that students now are very sensitive to differing opinions. Yeah. We've seen speakers disinvited. We've seen, you know, the whole safe space controversy kind of explode. Do you think that's a bit of a reflection of the fact that it is so one-sided and that for so long now that other viewpoints have been in the minority?
A good education should be offensive, right? And it should be offensive because it really does pit competing conceptions of the good or competing conceptions of justice against one another, right? So being offended, it seems to me, is the price that we pay for our diversity. It's the price we pay for a good education. And if you want a different kind of education, right, if you want an inoffensive education, it seems to me you go to a fundamentalist college or something like that. Sort of that's the model, it seems to me, of an education that's intentionally non-offensive, right? It's trying to shelter those students. It's trying to protect them from views, right, that might undermined their faith communities. And I don't mean to denigrate that kind of education. I think there's an important place for it in American education, but it's not the model, it seems to me, of a secular liberal arts education.